I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Just as the temperature rises, so too does the heat in Washington. With the Supreme Court's decision to uphold the Affordable Care Act, nothing seems to have cooled tempers or rhetoric on either side of the debate. Today, our political pundits are back to take the heat down a notch and bring you analysis of the latest in national and local politics. We'll talk about how the court's ruling on President Obama's Health Care Reform Act will affect this year's presidential and congressional contests, and whether Kansas Governor Sam Brownback's tax cuts will reap benefits for the Sunflower State. Those topics and more on Up to Date following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. President Obama is supposed to be getting a bump in his poll ratings in the wake of last week's U.S. Supreme Court ruling, but that bump appears to be slow in the making based on the latest surveys. Today, we'll survey the presidential race and talk Kansas and Missouri politics with our pundits. We'll talk about how Governor Sam Brownback is faring in the wake of that massive tax increase measure he just signed, and later, we'll look at that big U.S. Senate race in Missouri. With us this morning is Bob Beatty. He's a political scientist at Washburn University in Topeka. Bob, always good to have you. Good morning.
Good to be with you, Steve.
Burdette Loomis is also here. He teaches politics at the University of Kansas. Bird, good morning.
Nice to be here, Steve.
And my partner, Dave Helling, is here. He covers politics and is the Star's multimedia reporter. David, how are you?
Great to be here.
Now, I thought President Obama was in line to receive a nice little pop in his poll numbers following last week's stunning U.S. Supreme Court ruling on health care. But poll numbers out over the weekend, obviously they're still early, but even from Gallup and other pollsters, show his situation to be pretty static. Bird, what's going on there?
I think the right word is static.
Yeah, right.
And the thing is that it's static, if you look at Real Clear Politics, which is the average of polls.
That's where I was.
It's about 3.7% margin for him right now. And I think that people a couple weeks ago, or 10 days ago, were saying, oh, he was having a bad week. Things weren't looking very good. And then he has apparently a good week with the Supreme Court decision, and nothing really moves. And the question is, maybe nothing is moving. But the other thing is, maybe the media are overinterpreting all these events, whether things are looking a little down for Obama or a little up. Because after all, the opinions about Obama are very strong, very well formed, and it may be perfectly reasonable to think that whatever the news is, absent hugely good economic news, that things won't move much.
Bob Beatty, do you buy that?
Well, I, if you look at actually Thursday, June 21st, you see Obama winning ahead in a number of states and nationally, and he sort of inched up. But once Romney clinched the nomination, he got a bump, which is sort of traditional. John Kerry got one as well in 2004. And then Obama sort of is eked up to a 3 to 4 point lead nationally and in a number of key states. And I think one thing we have to remember is that Obama has started advertising. And just last night, I was watching ESPN, and an Obama ad came on. And he's starting to spend a little of his money, and there's going to be an effect to that. But I agree with Professor Loomis that this may be an election where the media is looking for stories, and the population is not going to respond to that. We've said before, this may be essentially a 46-46 election, and then either candidate could pull ahead. But right now I'm saying it's probably a three-point Obama election at this point, and maybe there won't be great divergences in that all the way through November.
You know, Dave Helling, so not much pop for Obama having won on the U.S. Supreme Court front last week. What would have happened if he had lost that ruling?
Well, I think it would have been a bigger downside for Barack Obama as a loser at the court than there is an upside in winning. The status quo is always a little hard to sell to the public. And I do think he would have been blamed for wasting, quote unquote, the first 18 months of his presidency on what turned out to be unconstitutional. That didn't happen. I do think, though, that the health care decision will provide a bit of a long-term boost to the Republican nominee, only because I do think it sort of galvanizes the Republicans who now believe they have only one more chance to get rid of a law that they despise. I mean, I've never seen legislation in covering politics for 30 years that is so hated by a large segment of the population. So I do think they'll see this opinion as a galvanizing factor going forward. But I think both professors here are spot on when they suggest that, A, most people have made up their mind about Barack Obama already. And to that, I would add, most people have made up their mind about the health care law, too, for good or for ill. That's why you didn't see much of a bump after the decision last Thursday. So I do think that the race will come down to the last 2 or 3 weeks in terms of what the headlines suggest, in terms of whether either candidate can move ahead of the other
Bert,
at the last minute.
If everyone has made up his or her mind about President Barack Obama and he's still below 50%, is that then not a pretty bad sign for him?
Yeah, it's not a great sign. I mean, I think that if he's over 50% in job approval ratings, things look pretty good for him. If the economy is looking better, things look good for him. But he has maintained this upper 40s approval rating better than all these other presidents.
Who sort of bounce around a lot.
Reagan, Clinton, whatever. So he's really got a very solid base. Likewise, I think that the anti-Obama folks have a very solid base. And so at the end of the day, again, absent some huge economic news, this is going to be a turnout election on both sides, pulling people almost reluctantly to the polls.
Yeah.
I mean, after 5 months more of advertising, which we won't see too much of, maybe ESPN, but the people are going to be really tired in the Colorados and Ohios of this world.
Can I? Yeah. I've said for some time that I think that this will be an election in which people will make a decision as to whether or not they like Barack Obama or don't. And if it gets to a point where the populace decides that Obama has had his chance, that, you know, let's try something new, anything new, then I think he's in serious trouble. At that point, then the fact that the nominee is Mitt Romney is almost immaterial. It becomes an anybody but Obama race, which I think in some ways is what we saw in 1980 when Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan were neck and neck. And then about 3 weeks out, 2 weeks out, everyone said, you know what, Carter, you've had your chance. Maybe we're moving on. That's what I think the biggest hurdle for Barack Obama is going to be. But we won't get a sense as to whether people have made that judgment or not, I don't think, until September, October, mid-October. That's why these polls, I think, now are kind of irrelevant to the decisions we'll see back in November.
You know, Bob Baby, to what extent are states such as Missouri and Kansas going to try to, you know, to stall, I guess, when it comes to implementing various aspects of this ruling? You get the sense that Missouri and Kansas lawmakers, the governors, are really going to take their time.
Yes. In the last couple of days, Florida, the governor of Florida announced they'd be rejecting the Medicaid provisions because the Supreme Court will allow states to do that. I can certainly see Kansas, you know, going in that direction. Maybe we'll talk about this later, but the day of the Supreme Court healthcare decision, I saw a news clip of Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, and he not only looked like his dog had died, but his favorite dog had died.
Mm-hmm.
And as he said, this is now very political. And I guess that's the big complaint over this all this healthcare discussion, is that it's become so political, and I think Dave's already mentioned it, so ideological on both sides that the policy is often getting lost. But I'd like to point out one thing is that Barack Obama is a very good campaigner. I'm not so sure. We'll have to see how good a campaigner Mitt Romney is. But I think Barack Obama is very, very excited about, for example, going into those three debates against Romney to talk about what the health care provision is. A local TV station in Topeka went out to the day of the decision to ask people about the healthcare, you know, pro or con, and they couldn't find people who knew what was in the act, the details of it. They just knew I'm against it, I'm for it. Barack Obama gets to go describe the details of that health care act, in which there's a number of very popular measures within the act. So that'll be interesting to see Romney and Obama in those debates.
You know, Bert, in the state legislatures this next year in Jefferson City and in Topeka, there's going to be this big debate about expanding Medicaid as allowed under the Obama plan or, as a Supreme Court ruling suggested, keeping the programs basically status quo. Now, the federal government pays nearly 100% of the expanded caseload, at least initially. So why wouldn't states like Kansas and Missouri just hop on that?
Well, you said initially.
Okay.
So you get three years, and then as some chickens come home to roost, although as I understand it, it's still going to be 90%. I guess I'd pick up on what Bob said on the policy side. I think Sam Brownback is starting to run some serious risks because he's gambled, as we'll talk maybe later, with this huge tax cut bill that looks down the road like a disaster waiting to happen. And now he's passed up $30 million, $31 million in healthcare exchange money. He has
he said no thanks to Washington, keep your $31 million.
And I do think here that we have to we have to have a serious discussion, a thought about federalism. Okay, the federal government, it may be the enemy, but it's an enemy that provides lots of money. And at some point, you want whatever health care policy is in effect, even if you don't like it, to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to the extent that Sam Brownback says no, 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 and people are wondering why not, this is a problem for him. A couple years out.
But people aren't wondering why not yet, are they?
I think they are. I think you're starting to see. If you look at the editorials in Kansas right now, time after at small town editorials, Hutch or Hayes.
Sure, but you put this health care act to a vote of the people in Kansas right now, it's going to lose, isn't it?
Right, but I think at the same time, they wonder why they're not, why money is being turned down. Farmers aren't turning down any money right now. I mean, it's perfectly easy to say, I'm against this whole thing, even if I don't know exactly what's in it.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. Now we're going to have to do it, and you've passed up a lot of opportunities. So I think there are different questions. That's why the policy element as opposed to the politics question policy may end up crowding out some of the politics.
Yeah. You know, there is, interestingly enough, Bob Beatty, there is one Kansas Republican standing up and saying this health care thing is worth pursuing. Her name is Sandy Prager, and she happens to be the insurance commissioner of the great state of Kansas. What is she saying? And talk about a lone voice in the wilderness here. Holy smokes.
Well, yeah, and for listeners who may not be know the story, you know, Sandy Prager was – many Republicans wanted her out last election and previous elections, that basically saying she's not a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, in a sense, that's what Kansas is right now has become. That and that's why we've been talking about the politics of all this versus the policy. Traditionally, there were many Republicans who were more concerned about, you know, get it, you know, the policy and making sure that once things happen, that let's try to make it work. And, you know, somebody like Sandy Prager is seen as with suspicion by Republicans in Kansas because of the politics. And she was, of course, called a rhino Republican in name only. So it's not, you know, it's not surprising that that she'd like to, you know, get moving on what is now, you know, going to be law. And it's also not surprising that in Kansas, you know, she's going to be relatively unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is, as you noted, that if you had a vote on the health care in Kansas, it would probably go down resoundingly, but a person like Sandy Prager can get elected statewide.
I'll bet you money, Bob, this is a sign that she's not running for re-election. Maybe not. Well, if you're just joining our conversation this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking with our political pundits, talking about the presidential race. We're talking about Governor Sam Brownback in just a couple of minutes with Bob Beatty from Washburn University, KU's Burdette Loomis, and Dave Helling from The Star. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Dave Helling, what about all this talk about Chief Justice John Roberts taking one for the country with his vote last week in favor of President Obama's health care law. He reportedly was going to side with the conservatives in this case and then switch, seemingly to preserve the legitimacy and integrity of the Supreme Court as being above politics, which is how New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman put it last week. What about all that? How significant a develop is John Roberts'
vote
here?
Well, there will be an enormous effort over the next several months for people to sort of parse the words of the opinion to try and work sources. You know, the Supreme Court is the last Washington institution from which leaks are almost impossible to get, although you do get the sense reading some of the stories that some people are talking. And I think it's pretty obvious to me anyway that when after the March arguments on the Affordable Care Act, you basically clearly had four liberals who wanted to uphold it and four conservatives who wanted to throw it out. And I think John Roberts looked at that situation and had a choice to make, whether to go with the conservatives and throw the entire law out or go with the liberals on a narrow basis and keep the law but give the court and the Republicans some victories on the Commerce Clause, for example, or for other parts of the law that might have – or the Medicaid expansion decision, which you just talked about. Those things actually over the long term might actually help conservatives and the Republicans.
Yeah.
So I think his – and – he may have thought that maybe I'm going to give an issue to Mitt Romney going forward. That might help the Republicans in the fall election. So I think he just sort of made a choice. Now,
Dave,
I have no reporting on this at all, but this is a guess. My guess is if the four conservatives on the court had agreed to throw out the individual mandate but keep the rest of the law, they might have been able to get John Roberts on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think at that point Roberts would have said, yes, the mandate on the commerce under the Commerce Clause is not acceptable, but if you throw out the whole law as a practical matter, we'll be seen as some sort of partisan disaster, 5-4. But the conservatives were not willing to do that. They wanted to get rid of the whole thing. At that point, I think Roberts sat down and said, okay, maybe there's a deal I can cut with the other side.
You know, Bert, I am just shocked here. Dave Helling is talking about the U.S. Supreme Court as a political institution. It's the court, Bert. How can that be true?
Well, it is.
Yeah.
I do think that – I was looking back to the 60s where it was quite liberal and – people like Justice Douglas, extremely political guy, came from the Senate, very ideological. But I do think that I think at the time, Bush v. Gore was accepted. Gore was gracious. It's interesting, 12 years later, that still sticks in people's throat as a big lump,
mm-hmm.
because it was a 5-4 decision to decide the presidency. And you have Citizens United since then, a couple of our decisions. And I do think that the Chief Justice looked at this and said, this is going to be seen as one more political decision, which it would have been,
mm-hmm.
I believe,
mm-hmm.
And backed off. But I think we're going to have a lot of reporting on this over the years. But there are some hints in the opinion in which the liberal side, their arguments are called the dissent.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty clearly, and I was reading some reporting this morning that Roberts, late in the game, changed his mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is going to be a live issue for a while. I do think that one of the things it does, I think the conventional wisdom that it helps Romney a little bit, I'm not sure, because I heard Obama the morning, and he hadn't had a good narrative on health care.
He's got a better one now.
And there's the mini narratives on the policies, which are some of which are very popular. But the big narrative is, look, it went through the process. It has a Supreme Court stamp of approval. We should now get on with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that to sort of contradict myself is the other thing that Mitt Romney has to worry about is that he is by far the single worst person on the planet to make the argument against Obamacare. I mean, you could not pick a human being who is in a worse position to make the case. Broadly, it might help the Republicans. And I think you do hear some talk that it will help down ballot, for example, in the Missouri Senate race, which, by the way, in Missouri will also have a referendum on the health exchanges on the ballot this year. there is a sense that it might help the Republican candidate in Missouri or mm-hmm. other Senate races marginally, less than it might impact the Barack Obama Mitt Romney race at the top of the ticket. We'll see.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Iowa for the Republican caucuses, and every candidate from Gingrich to Bachman to Perry to, of course, Santorum, their major argument was that the worst person to discuss Obamacare was Mitt Romney, and there he is on the day of the decision. And after, 8 months of people pounding him saying, don't believe this guy on health care reform, he's not credible.
I
think that I think Dave's right. I think that certainly had a cumulative impact.
Bob, we're using the term Obamacare in our conversation, and hasn't there been a change of thinking within the Obama administration about the use of that term? It was sort of seen as a negative in a sense, but now they're sort of embracing the term, if I understand right.
Well, we've made history here because that's the first time I've ever used it. but it's also a lot easier to say when we have limited time.
Or limited space in your newspaper. That's exactly
but,
right.
But, when Dave was talking, I was reminded of President Obama's speech he gave a while back where he said, Obama cares. Hey, yeah, I do care. And that's now become a talking point of his campaign to signify the overall theme of his administration. And that goes back to Kansas, in which we have 12.5% of Kansans without health insurance and 7-8% of them are children. And I think Professor Loomis's point of at some point that's policy that has to be addressed. And those are facts, and I think that's what Obama's going to run on, is that here's the facts, we got to do something about it.
I think one of the boxes that the Republican Party is in is the fact that the Affordable Care Act is in many ways a Republican invention. I mean, people all the time say, well, Republicans need to provide an alternative if they repeal Obamacare, but Obamacare is the Republican alternative. That's what people forget, mm-hmm. that in essence, what the Democrats, I think, were more interested in early on was sort of Medicare for everyone or a much broader, if not a single-payer system, certainly some system that provided universal mm-hmm. care on the Medicare model. Instead, they did go with this system that, in essence, was designed by Mitt Romney and others several years ago. And so the Republicans are in a box when they're asked about what they would replace this law with because all of their ideas have been taken. At the same time, the Democrats have been horrible in explaining that to people.
Terrible.
Absolutely horrible. And so you do get this sense that the public generally dislikes a law that they absolutely don't understand at all.
I always got the sense that some of the Democrats especially, that it was sort of like, well, we got to wait for the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
What's the point of really going wild explaining this? I don't know.
Well, one reason we bring Burdette Loomis on this program is because he has insights that no one else has. His insight this month is going to be who Mitt Romney's vice presidential pick is going to be. Bird, you have the floor.
Gee, I was thinking about this the other day and trying not to think about it. someone popped up the name, the great mentioner in Russell Baker's wonderful phrase, of Mike Huckabee. Which didn't seem like a bad idea to me, to tell mm-hmm. you the truth. And that's about as deep as I can go into this.
Yeah. Bob, what do you think?
Well, the problem is that I was going to say Rob Portman, but now everybody's saying that. So
Huckabee's an interesting idea, actually.
I think he's very possible, mainly because he's from Ohio. And there's been a number of picks in the modern history that weren't from key states. And looking back, candidates wish they would have, a la John Kerry. But Burdette, that's a very interesting name threw out there.
Let's turn to Kansas Governor Sam Brownback just for a moment, and we talked a little bit about how he's dealing with the health care issue. He did sign that monumental tax cut, income tax cut, just a few weeks ago. Bob, how's that playing across the state? Do you have any early soundings on that yet?
Well, in a sense, it's hard to say. Because there's so many parts going on in Kansas government, in the sense that this idea that there was this deficit, but now it's going to go, and if it goes, it's because of the tax cuts. But that's all a little hazy because what about the stimulus? What about the tax increase on the mm-hmm. sales tax? So it's going to be it's this is not a good answer, but it's going to be hard to measure unless there's a clear deficit going forward. I think Governor Brownback will claim success if there's simply no deficit. And it's also, you know, you've discussed it. Governor Brownback went on national television and said this is a great experiment. And that, you know, to be honest, a lot of Kansans don't quite understand or this summer don't know that he's said that, and he's openly admitted, hey, we're going to see if this works. What the heck?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there was a, you know, a very well-funded, strong Democrat out there, boy, they could really make hay. But in Kansas, I don't think there is.
Bert, Bob just said if there's a big deficit that results from this tax cut, there's really no question, at least based on projections, there's not only going to be a deficit, but in theory, a very sizable deficit.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
I don't think that there's any question about that, that if you look at the first year, we get by. The second year is questionable. After that, we're headed totally south, and regardless of how many jobs are created, whatever. So I think that Senator Brownback or Governor Brownback is kind of in a race here for 2014, and I think Bob's right that when do the chickens come home to roost?
Mm-hmm.
And most governors can find a way to jiggle things for 1 year. 2013 is going to be okay. Can he jiggle things for 2014?
When he's up for re-election.
When he's up for re-election. And that's the bigger question. But I think that the analysis here is straightforward. And here's the real key. We can't have a deficit in terms of our Constitution. And so 2 years out, there are going to be some humongous cuts. And where do you cut? Well, you cut in education and maybe health.
Mm-hmm.
Transportation. So I think that the vision for the out years is pretty clear here, and so it's not a question of whether we'll have a deficit, but what gets cut to balance the budget.
You know, Dave Helling, what an interesting choice of words for the governor to refer to this tax cut package as a big gamble.
Yeah, because the irony, of course, is this isn't the package he wanted, and it isn't really the package the legislature
wanted.
I mean,
yeah.
In some ways, the great dysfunction of Kansas government was evident in that this huge tax package passed, and nobody really wanted it. Somebody miscalculated somewhere. There is a window that I think comes next year. In next year's session, in which you will have an enormous number of new legislators because of the redrawn districts in the state of Kansas. And there is a window that would provide the legislature some ability to revisit the tax package in 2013 before the kind of cuts that Bert is talking about actually take effect. And there's a chance, it's a small chance, that the legislature might take that opportunity and say, look, we acted in haste. Let's see if we can reconfigure this tax package now. The problem for Sam Brownback and for the state legislature going forward is no one wants to ever raise taxes. It's the hardest vote you can cast. And once taxes are cut, it's so hard to bring it back to where even mm-hmm. it was before because it's seen as a tax increase. That's why I say the window is very, very small. But I do think if you talk to enough Republicans and Democrats in the state, they realize that the package is not – what anyone really wanted, and that there might be some opportunity to take another look at it.
Bob?
Well, what you can do is cut, for example, education spending if there's a deficit, and then tell the local school boards, well, you have the option now to increase local taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very possible, too.
You know, Bob Beatty, the big battle this summer in Kansas is over which faction, the conservatives or the moderates, are going to win control of the state Senate. Who do you think is going to win?
That you asked that after the VP question?
Yes, right. Come on, bring it.
Yeah. The power, first of all, the Kansas chamber has endorsed a number of very conservative challengers to the Senate. And the chamber doesn't necessarily have an excellent track record in terms of picking winners that they're trying to overturn incumbents. Second, so that's possible that to look as a factor to look at. The second factor is the power of incumbency. For example, you know, in Topeka, Laura Kelly, a Democrat, will be challenged by Dick Barta in the general. But you know, she's built up a constituency. What we don't know is whether that incumbent advantage will hold, but I think it's going to help a senator, you know, for possibly like a Vicky Schmidt in Topeka. But the biggest question is how much money is going to get poured outside interests, and how will that impact the voter? If there's a point, they'll say, enough is enough. Clearly, my incumbent, whoever that is getting attacked unreasonably, and I'm going to retreat to voting like I always have.
And the money bird that Bob might be talking about might be coming from the Koch brothers, right?
Well, part of it will come from the chamber. And certainly the incumbents, the moderate Republicans, have raised more money than ever before. But I think you could see hundreds of thousands of dollars per race come in. Now, I wonder how you spend that money in some of these districts with direct mail and stuff like that. It's kind of problematic. Where you have media, it's easier, Wichita, Topeka. But some of these districts have almost. So there are a lot of moving parts. They only have to win two or three races. And I think it's totally up in the air right now. But the redistricting did a couple of things. First of all, it increased the number of even Senate races that are competitive. And secondly, it created, as Dave suggests, a lot of competitive House races.
Yeah.
And so some of that financial advantage may well be dispersed a little bit because there are so many other races that need some money. But it's the biggest, strangely enough, a few state Senate primaries may be the biggest political decision that the candidates will make for some time.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation, but we'll move on to the Missouri side of the state line with that very big U.S. Senate race that's now underway. Three Republicans vying for the GOP nomination. We'll be joined by Joe Manies from the St. Louis Beacon to talk about that. I want to thank Bob Beatty for taking time with us this morning to talk about Kansas. Bob, always good to have you.
Great to be with you.
That's Bob Beatty, a political scientist at Washburn U over in Topeka. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our Kansas City area reaction to the Supreme Court's ruling on the Affordable Care Act, you can find it and all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, author David Marinus joins us to discuss his detailed biography of President Barack Obama. Well, let's turn to the Missouri side of the state line and a very important race for the U.S. Senate that's already underway. Three Republicans are vying for the nomination and the right to take on Democrat Claire McCaskill this fall. Dave Helling from The Star and KU's Burdette Loomis are still with us. And joining me now is Joe Manny. She covers politics for the St. Louis Beacon. Joe, good to have you again. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for asking me.
Joe, let's start with just a baseline look at these three Republicans. Who are they? Just give us a very brief description of who the three candidates are here.
Okay, well, Todd Akin is a congressman from suburban St. Louis.
Right.
He's been in office since 2001. He won a crowded primary then. He's extremely conservative, very closely tied to the religious conservative movement here in Missouri. And he's done things in Congress such as try to make sure that under God stays in the Pledge of Allegiance, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's been key things for him. Then we have former state treasurer Sarah Stillman, who was the state treasurer for 4 years from Rolla from 2004 to 2008. She was known while she was in the legislature as, I mean, which was previously, as being a renegade, and that continued during her stint as state treasurer. She often has been at odds with her own party, challenged the favored candidate for governor in 2008, Kenny Holschoff. He still won, but she damaged him enough that was seen as one of the reasons that he lost big to
right.
Governor Nixon in the fall. Then you've got a newcomer, relatively, John Bruner, who's a wealthy businessman from the St. Louis area who has tons of money because he sold his family's business a few years ago to a group of investors. His whole message has been that he'll cut federal spending, and he doesn't have a voting record to shoot at, so he's been shooting a lot at the other two's voting record. At the same time, they're pointing to the fact that his previous firm has done some layoffs and has seen its credit rating downgraded and mm-hmm. trying to basically do to him what Obama's trying to do to Romney is to raise questions about his business expertise. That's the gist of these three.
You know, Dave Helling, there's a real belief among Republicans this summer that the winner of this intense three-way primary is going to wind up being the next U.S. senator from Missouri. Do you buy that line of thinking?
Not completely.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I think the Republican, a generic Republican, doesn't have an advantage in Missouri. I think that he or she will, because I think Missouri is increasingly a Republican state, which we've talked about on the show many times. And I think Claire McCaskill is probably vulnerable in some ways. We've talked about her support for Barack Obama, who is rather unpopular in the state of Missouri, her vote for the Affordable Care Act, her vote for the stimulus. I mean, she's been a pretty reliable Democratic vote on important issues. Now, she'll make the case she's been independent and she's done audits and a bunch of other things. But by and large, she's a dependable Democratic vote. That might be unpopular in Missouri. Having
mm-hmm.
said that,
mm-hmm.
and having watched a little bit all three of the major Republican candidates, you don't get the sense that they ignite the state either. I mean, you don't get the sense that John Bruner mm-hmm. is even known in the Kansas City area, let alone bringing some sense of dynamism to the race. Sarah Steelman has been around for a while. She has some advantage maybe in that field in terms of her name recognition in the state of Missouri. And she is a woman. I think that's helpful, too. But and Joe knows this. Todd Akin is very well known in St. Louis, but virtually unknown in this area. So I don't think that it's a slam dunk for the Republican nominee. But the headwinds for Claire McCaskill are very obvious.
Joe, what separates these three from each other? I mean, is there going to be a defining issue that emerges in the GOP primary that's, you know, somehow going to wind up making a big difference here?
Well, actually, there isn't much.
All three
of them promise to cut spending. All three of them say they're against most government handouts, most government programs. I mean, Akin talks about, you know, that Social Security and Medicare and some of the other ones were mistakes. So what they're doing now is spending a lot of time trying to create differences between the three of them. Bruner has already spent at least $2 million on TV ads trying to make himself better known around the state because, yeah, Dave's absolutely right, outside the St. Louis area. Well, in fact, even in the St. Louis area, Bruner isn't that well known among anyone who's not a political junkie. Now, Steelman and Akin, as I mentioned earlier, are hammering at his own business record and also saying that he lacks experience. But I would say the most defining issue between the three, and this shows how close they are on everything, has been Akin's embrace of a change getting rid of the Constitution's 17th Amendment that allows for the direct election of U.S. senators. He wants to go back to the old days where the legislature picked it, and that's been an issue in several of their debates.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruner and Steelman oppose that. That is the extent of their marked differences.
Bird.
I got a question here as a Kansan. It strikes me two questions, really. One is that Claire McCaskill, to me, has always been a great survivor,
mm-hmm.
someone who can, you know, may not be the flashiest person, but is really.
Yeah.
So what's happened on that front? Why this time? And secondly, it strikes me these three candidates demonstrate something about the Republican Party in Missouri,
mm-hmm.
that you're really moving very, very far to the right.
It's been remarkable,
well,
David.
But remember, Bird, that's That's typical in Republican primaries.
I understand that.
I mean, take a look at the 3rd District in Kansas primary last time in 2010 with Kevin Yoder. I mean, Kevin Yoder arguably is not as conservative as other parts, Patricia Leitner or other people who were in that race, but he went very far to the right. I think some of that dynamic is here as well, although – and Joe can talk about this too. Todd Akin is a very conservative guy. He always has been. If you look at his voting record, very, very conservative person. The answer to your first question is Claire McCaskill hasn't changed so much. She's a survivor, as you suggest. But the state has changed. The state has moved to the right, 4 or 5 points to the right, much more like Arkansas now than, say, like Iowa. And so where Claire McCaskill could run a credible race in 2006 – it's tougher on those themes to win in 2012. Yeah. That's my view. Maybe Joe has a different opinion.
Well, Joe, you just mentioned that Bruner is already up on TV. He's spending some money, unlike Sarah Steelman and Todd Akin, at least as of yet. Let's listen to one of John Bruner's early ads, and then I'll have Dave and Joe react to it here.
While John Bruner was creating jobs and manufacturing products, Todd Akin and Sarah Steelman were manufacturing debt. In Congress, Akin voted to raise the debt limit over $3 trillion and wasted billions on earmarks. In the state Senate, Steelman voted to put Missouri billions in debt and back millions in wasteful pork projects like they do in Washington.
As your senator, I'll put a stop to the reckless spending and get America working again. I'm John Bruner, and I approve this message.
Joe, do you have just a sort of a quick reaction to that ad? How fair is it? How accurate is it? Any quick thoughts?
Well, what it's dealing with are some basic votes that Akin and Steelman have taken. In Akin's case, it's attacking his votes during the Bush years in favor of raising the debt ceiling. And in Steelman's case, it has to do largely with a vote in 2003 in the legislature, which they all passed. It was on a bond issue, and it helped balance the budget that year and also put some money for some stuff. Bruner is attacking that. Now, as Dave was talking about, the changes in the state are such, arguably, that the legislature now would never even take up such an issue as a bond issue as they did back then. But I do disagree slightly with Dave a little bit. I think that if you look at the 2010 vote results and see the shift towards the GOP in that one, I don't think you can necessarily compare that to 2012. I think 2012 may not be 2008, where there was a huge Democratic sweep, but if the Democrats do an even decent job, which you never know, of getting their people out and doing a better turnout model and igniting their base, they could do better than they did in 2010. I've seen some private polls that show Obama down in the state by only 3 or 4 points. And if he's down by only that much, McCaskill has a chance. If he gets down by much more than that, she doesn't.
Yeah, I've seen some of those polls too, Joe, and for the life of me, my gut tells me I just don't buy those numbers. I think Obama's down more than that, particularly after that 2008 election, Obama pulled out every stop in the book to try to win Missouri against John McCain back then and just couldn't get it done.
Can I just one of the things that might change this dynamic for the Democrats in Missouri in 2012 is Jay Nixon, who is running for re-election against David Spence, and no one thinks that Spence is going to be competitive, at least at this point. If Jay Nixon were to be more aggressive in sort of spreading his popularity around the state on behalf of Claire McCaskill or on behalf of Barack Obama, Joe might be right that it might boost them 1 or 2 points each, because I think she is right. If Obama is only down 3 or 4 points in Missouri, Claire really has a shot. But you get no sense, none, that Jay Nixon is out for anyone but Jay Nixon. He didn't help Robin Carnahan. He's focused like a laser beam on his own reelection. And so there doesn't seem to be any sense that Jay Nixon will be able to drag the Democratic ticket forward in 2012 to the benefit of either Obama or McCaskill, mm-hmm. in my view, and that may be a problem for the Democrats.
Let me get our listeners to react to Senator Claire McCaskill, her term in office, Governor Jay Nixon, or any of the challengers here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. You know, Joe, Dave Helling just mentioned Governor Jay Nixon, a Democrat. How much peril is he in this year from your standpoint, or is he looking at a pretty smooth glide path to reelection here?
Well, there's no guarantee for one key reason. Dave Spence, like Bruner, made a whole lot of money by selling his company and already has put several million dollars of his own money in the race. And the general view is that there's more millions where that money came from. So if you have a candidate who's largely self-funding and you're not sure how much they're going to self-fund, it can cause problems. Now, I think all sides agree that Nixon has an edge, that's for sure. But I've been covering this long enough that I've seen sometimes somebody who you thought had no shot in July somehow managed to get across the finish line in early November.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I think there's no question that Nixon's the favorite, but depends on what Dave talked about, the headwinds against Obama, and if Spence can really put together a salient message and really continue hammering at Nixon and having the right sort of TV ads, and that something unexpected doesn't happen, you know, because we've all seen these elections where something unexpected has happened that has changed the dynamics. So I always have that little bit of caution because nothing's certain in politics until that right minute after the votes are counted.
But you do get a sense, Joe, that Dave Spence's campaign has been struggling. And I should point out that there's a Kansas Cityan who's also in the GOP primary, a man named Bill Randles, right?
Yes. And in fact, I've seen some polls, especially like Lincoln Day events, which are these Republican insider events,
right,
that show that Randles actually outbeats Spence. And this is among primary voters and among activists. So for whatever reason, Spence has chosen to ignore Randles entirely for the primary, even though partly because Randles hasn't spent that much money to get his name out. So the assumption is that at least enough of the Republicans who turn out won't know him and he'll go ahead and vote for Spence.
Yeah.
But I think some of this is going to depend on the old-fashioned, you know, igniting your base, getting them excited or not excited. And in 2010, there was no question. The Democrats did an awful job.
Mm-hmm.
Awful, awful, awful. And the blame goes all the way around. I mean, Nixon shares some of it, but Robin Carnahan, who generally ran a terrific campaign in 2004, didn't do a good job in 2010, for whatever reason. It just, you know, she had the headwinds, but even with that, she arguably could have done a little better so she didn't lose by so much and drag so many other Democrats down with her.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Mark from Blue Springs. Mark, you're on UpToDate. Good morning. You there, Mark? He had a question about why does Missouri seem to be moving more conservative here? Let's go. Mark, go ahead. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Two questions. There was a book which I have not read, What's the Matter with Kansas, in which people from Kansas appeared to be going against their own best interests by becoming more conservative.
Right.
How does that relate to Missouri? And secondly, what are the positions that these candidates are taking in terms of corruption in business, such as the banking scandals, weakening of the SEC, things like that?
Mark, thank you. Bert, give us your sense from the Kansas perspective here. Why is Missouri moving to the right? What's your take on that?
I think that part of it is that you're talking about is becoming, I thought it was a great line, becoming more like Arkansas than Iowa. I mean, I do think in the end, this kind of southernness is taking over and is more perhaps in line with politics today.
Still fighting the Civil War.
And honestly, I do think that you see people voting against their own self-interest. That doesn't mean they're not voting in their own interest, which might be very conservative on social issues. And I also think you've got the role of the central cities is smaller and smaller. And
the urban areas have emptied out that or are emptying out. That's a the labor unions, which used to be very, very powerful, Steve, are now shrinking.
Yeah.
And then what's happened in Mississippi and Arkansas and Georgia is finally happening in Missouri, and that is old-line Democratic voters are shifting to the Republican Party. People who grew up like Ike Skelton being Democrats, sort of rural Harry Truman Democrats, are now Republicans. And so you put all those things together, decline of unions, decline of cities, and that sort of generational shift of the South. It's not a surprise that Missouri is voting the way it is.
Hmm. You know, Joe, we just have about a minute left here. What about a couple of other races? Just very, very quickly here. Interesting primary race on the Republican side for Lieutenant Governor. Two-term incumbent Peter Kinder going against State Senator Brad Lager. Is Kinder in any trouble, Joe, in your estimation?
I think somewhat, because Lager is getting a lot of the big donations from some of the big donors who used to be with Kinder.
Mm-hmm.
So Lager hasn't spent that much on TV ads and stuff yet, but I predict he will in the next few weeks. Because it's a primary, I mean, a case could be made that Kinder would be a stronger candidate in the general election because it's already won several times statewide. But in a primary, Lager, because he's going to have more money, and I think he's going to be a serious challenger.
Hmm.
So, and then of course on the Democratic side, they got that huge crowd,
big crowd of people
running for lieutenant governor, including former state auditor Susan Monty and couple state reps or former state reps. That one's going to get nasty too, and because most of the major candidates on that side are women, so the odds are you're going to have a woman lieutenant governor nominee on the Democratic side.
Right. Oh, well, Joe, we're out of time, but thank you for taking some time with us today. It's always good to have you, Joe.
Well, thanks so much for asking me. Appreciate it.
You bet. All the best. That's Joe Manny. She's with the St. Louis Beacon. Burnett Loomis from KU was also here. Dave Helling with the Kansas City Star. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
My pleasure.
Always good to have you here. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR. Up to date. Tomorrow, a good one, author David Marinus and his biography of President Barack Obama. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.